The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jim Kawakami, the editor-in-chief of the very athletic Bay Area. Jim Kawakami.
Tim Kawakami, who has covered the NBA for over two decades, and more specifically the Golden State Warriors over the last 12 years.
This is the TK Show.
Hey, everybody. Tim Kawakami here. TK Show, recording from the home studio, as always. Have on my guest, my friend, the former colleague, man about town, Substacker Supreme. That would be Ethan Strauss. Ethan, how are you today?
I thought you'd go with my official bio as 49ers expert, 49ers insider, Tim.
Get into it. You are a 49ers obsessive. You should 49ers obsessive consult, whatever there used to be some. There used to be some of the Twitter feed, 49ers obsessive, whatever they call that, compulsive. That's what it was.
Yes,
and I would
get
very, very detailed messages from that person. Ethan, 49ers. You are the one who is most interested in the 49ers, I think, in the entire world, or way up there. How are you feeling about your football team right now? How, as you soak into this,
over here.
As you soak into the NFL mania, like you are, 49ers season ends. They go on a search for defensive coordinator. They end up with Robert Saleh, many other things that we know. Brock Purdy contract coming up. I did think it was interesting that I just did doing a mailbag. Did a Warriors one earlier this week, going to do 49ers kind of themed one in a little bit, and I got no questions on Brock Purdy's contract. I guess people are feeling pretty good about that. Everything's about defensive coordinator and offensive line. Where is your main concern with 49ers right now?
Well, I want to back it up a little bit because I came to all of this through the NBA. So I've enjoyed watching football, observing football, and I want your thoughts on it too, Tim, the way the different sports are. Because I'm so used to the NBA and some of the conversations that happen in the NFL confuse me. Sometimes I feel like the conventional wisdom is wrong in the NFL. In the NBA, I generally feel like people have it pretty clocked. In the NFL, I often wonder if just massive assumptions and conventional wisdom that people agree on are totally wrong. I mean, look at what's happened with running backs recently, where so much of the narrative is these guys don't matter, don't draft them first round. And lo and behold, Christian McCaffrey happens and Saquon Barkley seems to completely turn around the Eagles situation, well, along with Vic Fangio and the defense becoming great. But the point is that everybody knew that running backs didn't matter, and now clearly running backs matter. And at the same time, people are saying Ashton, Chianti with fava beans. I don't know. However you want us to pronounce his name.
Are you Don Nelson now? Ethan's turning into Don Nelson. That's actually a good move. Yeah. A good move for you. Yeah.
You know, it might be a good move for me. But yeah, I'm getting off on tangents, but I often say I have an NBA perspective on the NFL. That's how I felt about the Brock Purdy contract too, where people argue a lot about it. And my perspective is more of an NBA view where you just go, people get max contracts in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Not everybody who gets a max contract is a superstar. And I think NBA fans certainly price that in and understand that and understand the situation of, well, this young guy who might be a fringe all-star, I don't have a replacement for him. I can't get better losing him. So you pay the max slot. Obviously, in the NFL, there isn't a max slot. But it's sort of like that with quarterbacks where you've just got this top of the market for that season. And I've already steamrolled past it. I think a lot of the conversation with Purdy and the contract, it's not necessarily coming from the fans, as you're indicating. I think there's this sticker shock element where the people who hate him can get good content fodder when it's whatever it's going to be, 55, 60 million, whatever. Whereas if you take a 30,000 foot view, I believe the NFL salary cap might have gone up about 30 million over the last two seasons. I think it's still being projected for the next season. Actually, 40 million might be where it's
like
at.
26 in 1 year. It went like up 26 in like one year.
So people have the sticker shock of, oh my God, you can't pay your quarterback X amount. And they're not adjusting for how the salary cap is so much higher. And then it just gets back to this other eternal Brock Purdy conversation of, I don't think this guy is good, some people say, because of where he was drafted or because of what they observed. And he gave this just season that's so much fodder in a Rorschach test where the numbers, the advanced numbers would say seventh in QBR, would say fourth in EPA. But there were all these high leverage moments that didn't go well and all these games that ended in these ugly ways. And also there's the elbow thing. So yeah, I think the Brock Purdy contract discussion, it might be a bigger national media talking point when it ultimately happens. Locally, I think people have zoomed past it and are maybe of more my mentality where they're going to get it done. It's going to be a number. And as we can see with Jalen Hurts, you don't need your quarterback to perform at a Super Bowl or superstar level to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. And I don't know whether you can beat Patrick Mahomes, obviously, is a whole other question, which Brock Purdy faced last Super Bowl. But yeah, I mean, I've tagged him to Jalen Hurts for a while now. Like, Hurts didn't go for the highest contract. He wasn't one of those first round bonus babies. You know, he was second round, which is a little different than the last pick in the draft. But I think there's some team oriented, you know, roster building, the way the Eagles do it, a little different than the way the 49ers do it, but similar. They kind of want, they do kind of a cohesive picture of this of the cap, excuse me. But yeah, I don't think there's a way. I just was struck by it. You would think quarterback up, controversial as Brock Purdy is, at least on the talk shows, there would be a lot of fan angst about it, and I've gotten zero of it, which, you know, it could be a surprise. Maybe there will be.
It means you've got smart readers, Tim. It means you've got smart listeners. You've got smart fans, because I do think this is a bit of a red herring of a conversation. I do think it's more of a clicks conversation than an actual conversation, because the oddness of the NFL is that the salaries matter. There is a salary cap, but it might be a little overstated the extent to which that sort of thing matters. Yes, it helps the 49ers with more room if, and this is an oversimplification, Purdy is making $10 to $15 million a year less than whatever mark. That does help them. But the weirdness of the NFL is just so much of what makes you good is your draft picks. So often when you pay a veteran performer, it ends up being a bad contract. The 49ers might know something about that quite recently, or maybe not bad contract, but they did not get the performances in accordance to what they were paying these veterans of theirs, these star veterans. And then the NFL, you can keep, so easily keep your very best performers. So when you go big game hunting and you got a wad of bills in your pocket, you generally find it very difficult to get something franchise changing. You get Hargrave out there on the market. Mm-hmm. That's what you get. So yeah, it's better if they pay him a cheaper salary and that helps on the margins, but it really just comes down to, will he be good or will he stink? Will he be hurt or will he be healthy? That, you know, if the Jaguars got Trevor Lawrence for $15 million less, I don't think they're in a dramatically different situation than what they're in. It's really just a question of how will he do? Will he be good? And if you think he's good, then you're pretty happy with retaining him. And if you don't, well, if you don't, that's also a fair take. But for those who don't and have a lot of the angst, I want to hear the alternatives, because I hear a lot of, oh my God, don't do it, don't pay him. And a lot of the people who do the don't do it, don't pay him, you go, okay, well, what's my alternative plan?
Yep.
And usually it's silence at that point.
It's Tanner Mordecai.
Yes.
Brandon Allen. I'm going to
Sam Darnold.
Yeah, Sam Darnold, who would cost you just as much almost and is riskier. Yeah. But yeah, that's who it would be. Trey Lance, he's available. I'm going to write this a little bit. I do get the sense from 49ers that they think their offensive personnel is good. They've drafted very highly with offense. They've gone receiver. Now the offensive line's a whole other discussion, but they feel like their offense is well set up. It's up to Kyle Shanahan to coach them, and they think that where they needed the help was on defense. They're going to invest some more in talent there and have Saleh kind of fix that. You know, I what I sense is the anxiety for 49ers fans is the offensive line is not set 49ers, yeah. I think, kind of think it's okay, which, you know, it's a tussle with the Shanahan mindset that they just don't you invest in guys who score touchdowns, not in guys who block for the guys who score touchdowns.
I see a lot of Brendel getting walked back into the quarterback. A little too much of that to think things are great.
Yes. And you see that from the guards also. Well, Pooney was really good, but it's going to be – that's where I get the sense of anxiety from 49er fans is, are they going to invest in offensive line? And I get – the through line is, if you're going to pay Brock Purdy, let's say $52 million a year and $150 million in guarantees, don't you want him to be at his best, right? Don't you want him to have the opportunity to be as good as potentially as Justin Herbert or Matthew Stafford or whoever that top end for him could be? So then get him some guys who can block for him. Get him, you know, establish a real running game that can score touchdowns in the red zone, which they did not do last season. I don't know that that's what they're going to do. I don't think they're going to use the first round pick on a tackle. I just don't. I think it's going to be defense. I think their mode is to get back to that 2019 defense, and that means pouring investment in the defensive line. Ethan Strauss, as a noted 49er analyst,
expert, insider,
would you agree with that mindset of theirs, or do you think there's some weakness there?
I wonder, in getting Saleh back, if there's an element of reassurance that they're going to get some dudes, because he's not returning to a team that is at the talent level on defense that he left. So it wouldn't shock me. And it wouldn't shock me if, say, Walter Nolan was there. And I'm not sure where he's supposed to go. The defensive tackle who looks just cat quick and is getting a lot of buzz recently. I'm a little wary of how he compared himself to Aaron Donald. I saw in some interview that makes me a little bit wary, because I feel a little bit like Lloyd Benson in the vice presidential debate talking to Dan Quayle saying, "You're no Jack Kennedy." I just feel a little bit wary, but that's neither here nor there. That's definitely a peripheral issue. That would excite me though, if they got Nolan, if they got somebody who is a big difference maker. This is an interesting defensive tackle draft from what I can see too. Yep. There are some guys who are gigantic, and I wonder, given how the 49ers have done it, the size of Armstead, if they want a guy on the interior who's maybe not like Nolan, if they're not going to go Nolan early, but maybe one of these guys you can potentially get in the second round who are 6'6". There are a couple of these dudes. I can't even remember the names. There's that guy out of Kentucky who's fairly massive. And I think that could be something I could see him doing. And obviously they're not going to have the chance to get Abdul Carter. That would be cool.
No, they would love him. They would love
him. Yeah, that would be great.
You like someone else from Penn State, don't you? I think you got a...
Oh, Tyler Warren. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love Tyler Warren. Tyler Warren. He just seems like a 49er. I love the versatility. That's something that's really actually drawn me or drew me to the 49ers when I was at the Athletic, and actually even a little bit in between the Athletic and ESPN, is that they had a versatility to what they did, especially with when they got Christian McCaffrey. And I like that Tyler Warren can not only help as a tight end, and he's massive for a tight end, so help as a blocker, maybe help with some of the protection issues that they want, but he can play other positions in a pinch. He can play fullback, for instance, and maybe get more out of the gains. It certainly looks like it, than Juice can get. He looks like Gronk out there on some of these passes in the flats. I love that player. I don't know if he's a surefire thing like Brock Bowers was, but I think tight end is one of the most important positions. And this gets back to what I was saying earlier, that some of the conventional wisdoms of football, I question it. I wonder about it. I wonder about wide receivers getting paid twice as much as tight ends, when so many of these teams that end up going to the Super Bowl have great tight ends. And the Kansas City Chiefs, which have barely cared about receivers for a few seasons, are the Kansas City Chiefs, but they have Kelce. So I know they've got Kittle, but I think it's a miracle Kittle was, for the most part, healthy last season. I think it would be really cool if they had a double tight end attack when both are healthy. That would seem to perhaps optimize what Brock Purdy does well with the intermediate throws across the middle of the field. I would not be sad about that pick. I would almost list him as maybe my safety school, because it's expected he will be there. Some mocks have him higher, but I would not be mad at that. I know people would say that's a luxury, but it just fits them so well. And he seems like such a smart player. Would not be mad about that selection.
And you would have your eventual replacement for Kittle, right? I mean, you don't always draft mm-hmm. for eventual replacement, but you would have that. What I like about Warren is he scores touchdowns. I think 8 for Penn State, but yeah. some of them are really tough catches. And I think you need that with Purdy because he's not going to be really throwing guys to wide open. That's not his, you know, in the red zone, it's tougher. He needs guys to go up and get it. That's why Ayuk was so good for him. Debo not so good at that. I do think 11 is high for that. I would understand if they do, and that goes against my general sense. I think they have enough weaponry. They think they've invested enough money in the offense, but Tyler Warren would be a special case if you go, okay, future replacement for Kittle, potential sort of replacement for Juszczyk, even if you keep Juszczyk, and a guy who can score touchdowns for the quarterback. Hard to argue with that. We'll see how the push-pull goes on that. We'll see how he tests. You know, if there isn't, I think they take him over an offensive tackle. I do think that.
Unless Will Campbell falls.
There's something crazy like that happens. Absolutely.
Then yeah, I don't expect that to happen. But I think that there are probably maybe one or two tackles that you list and go, if they fall to here, then we go with those guys. I know so many people who root for the Niners want them to address the O-line issues. You just always have that. You've got that problem of at that selection spot, are you really getting that replacement? That's what they've defended. They've defended themselves in these interviews about how, well, we haven't addressed O-line because when you're drafting 30 or wherever they're drafting in the past, you're just not getting the difference maker. And I think that's a compelling argument, even if maybe there are guys they could have gotten. I'm wary of a reach. I'm wary of positional need reaches. And this goes back to the NBA mentality where my thought process when you've got an NBA lottery pick is just get the guy who's going to make an impact. Just do that. I would even be forgiving of Genty. So difficult for me. I just want to say it phonetically. I would be forgiving of Genty. Even if that's a luxury pick in many ways, and it could be criticized, obviously, just because somebody could defend me and say, that's an impact player. That's somebody the defensive coordinator is up at night, scared about, scheming against, and somebody who might open things up for you because you might not trust that McCaffrey is ever going to be himself again. Even that selection. But I think the other point of the Genty situation is that the Niners might have an advantageous trade down spot if some of these teams are running back hungry and specifically that guy enamored. I know the Cowboys, people talk about that. So if somebody wants to snake the Cowboys, maybe the 49ers could facilitate a great trade down option and get a good deal. So that's another thing. We're a ways away, but it's fun from the following 49ers perspective to have one of these picks in the top 15 versus at the end of the first round with where it's who the hell knows.
Or they don't have the pick, which they didn't have for a couple of years because they traded them all for Trey Lance.
That as well.
We'll end the 49ers discussion here unless Ethan wants to continue. But that's why that's why you don't move off of Brock Purdy, in my opinion, because if you don't have Brock Purdy, the last time they were searching for quarterback, they traded 3 first round picks to take Trey Lance. You don't want to get in that position.
It just needs to be a rule, Tim. It needs to be a rule for the 49ers content creator community. You have to tell me what is happening instead and stick with it. So we can laugh at some of the options too that get paraded about. And it's weird. There's a weird aspect to some of the media coverage of it where it's so easy to say, get this guy out of here, not worth the money. It's not so easy to say what you should do instead. It reminds me of all-star selections in the NBA where people lament, like, what? This is a snub. This is ridiculous that this guy didn't make the all-star team. And you go, well, who do you want off the all-star team? And it's just crickets. So that's a frustration of mine. I need to know the alternative if you're not going this route, because otherwise it's just not a compelling case to me.
the relative context discussion in the NFL. It's bad in every sport. It's bad everywhere. It's bad in politics, bad whatever. But it's especially bad in the NFL where it's get rid of this guy. He just lost the Super Bowl. He's horrible. There's no sense of, okay, then how are you going to be as good as you already were? Won't you risk being worse? Then that discussion does not, at least in, you know, the hot take worlds, it's always just get rid of that guy. He's horrible. You know, Jalen Hurts, the criticism that he's received or whatever. Like, we can all admit that sometimes these guys aren't always perfect and you can imagine a better world without them, but you better figure out what is practical to get after these people. And I would say that absolutely that that's the deal with Purdy now.
And the last thing I'll say before we transition to something else is that people get very much stuck on my quarterback needs to beat their quarterback. Like, he needs to be like Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. Josh Allen, by the way, that's a whole other conversation. Yeah. He's the second best quarterback, but situationally, I do think there's this weird media protection sometimes, but that's a different conversation. I think it's weird that he told the offensive line to all jump to the left and the right guard was looking back at him like, what are you doing, dude, on the biggest play of his life? But this is a whole other conversation. There are so many ways to be good in football. That's the fun of the NFL versus sometimes the NBA. And we might talk about it with the Warriors, where sometimes in the NBA, you're just stuck. You're just stuck. In the NFL, there are so many ways to skin that cat. And when I think about the 49ers and some of these quarterbacks they're up against, yeah, maybe they've got a point. Maybe defense is the answer. If you're going up against Jaden Daniels, who looks amazing, and you've got the lack of speed that the depleted Lions had, you're in a bad way. I mean, that matters more maybe even than whatever Goff's got going on, even if he really disappointed in that situation. So yeah, you look at it through other ways. How do you beat Mahomes? Well, the 49ers got very close when their defensive line was acting the way it should. So there are a lot of ways to do it. I think getting your quarterback in place is a prerequisite to having a high floor, but then to reach the ceiling, a lot of it might not be the quarterback. A lot of it might be these other impact positions that are less heralded.
All right. We've been going for 22 plus minutes here.
I love it.
I imagine some people would think we were going to talk a little Warriors, and Ethan always resists this. You're no longer Warriors. You've given it up, but the big picture, Ethan,
I feel not guilty about it.
Not the day to day. Somebody who literally wrote a book about the victory machine during the dynasty. As you see them now, stuck at 500, little up, little down. You know, Steph's older, misses games. Draymond's missing games. They could try to make a big move, but they don't want to. They're, you know, out there on the record saying they don't want to fling their assets around for something that's not going to make a big difference. What's your feeling on where they are this? Is the dynasty over? Can we put a period? And how would you cover this?
Man. So one of the reasons why I don't tend to talk about the Warriors is I feel guilty. I feel this weird sense, Tim, of I'm not in it like I was. Mm-hmm. And then I feel insecure about that because I'm almost representing like I'm still so knowledgeable, because when you're around the team, like we were around the team, you're having conversations with people up and down basketball ops and the coaches and the players, and you just have a better sense of things. And I think that's why I'm wary about it. It's not disinterest. It's just more this feeling of, I don't want to act like I'm somebody I'm not, but I can clearly see the situation generally. They're stuck. Everybody knows they're stuck. And the issue is that they're almost imprisoned by their past success and their past glory. Sam Presti can blow up the Thunder and he can trade an aging superstar to facilitate the bridge to the future and get draft picks. If I was asking ChatGPT or some sort of AI with a proper knowledge of the NBA and I asked, oh, well, what should the Warriors do? The bloodless robotic response would be to trade Steph Curry to some overeager owner and get draft picks of the future. But the problem is we're human beings and Steph Curry is arguably the most beloved athlete in this region's history and has won all these championships, unlike the players on the Thunder. And so even if that might be what makes sense superficially, nobody has the stomach or heart to want to do it. And that's part of why they're stuck. And I'm not sure how to get them out of that trap. I realize there's a lot of frustration about how the team has handled things. And I understand that the draft picks didn't hit, though I'm forgiving about the COVID draft resulting in Wiseman. That was a draft that was like Russian roulette, only you're playing it with five bullets instead of one. That was not a great draft. And yeah, maybe they should have gotten LaMelo, but I don't know. There's a lot of questions there still, despite his talent and the all-star votes. The situation that team's in is not exactly amazing. So I just look at it as I have sympathy for the team's position, that they're not trying to make a big move right now, and they're trying to almost wait out the end or wait for their moment. I think they're stuck. I think it's a condition of having this core age. And I think that they're, again, imprisoned by their past success. I'd extend that to Kerr. I'm not saying that Kerr deserves to be fired. I'm just saying that a different team could shake things up by firing the coach, and it wouldn't be a thing like it would be here, where you're firing the guy that's won all these championships. There are options the Warriors cannot explore, is what I'm saying, that other teams can explore. And so it just makes sense for them to wait it out. And I think that waiting and that purgatory is something the fans right now are mired in. And I get why they don't like it, because I don't like it either. It's uncomfortable.
It's the price of doing business when you've won four championships and have an all-time superstar in the middle of it. And I do think, you know, I've said this, and you can tell me if I just like fans and critics and NBA observers are very, very critical of NBA superstars who are neurotic and need to always go search for the next thing. And you wrote a book largely about that. And that understandable. Maybe we all would act like that. I certainly have changed jobs. I'm not putting myself out of that. But it's just interesting that Warriors fans in particular praise Steph for not being neurotic, for staying the course. He could have said, I'm not, you draft me. I don't want you to draft me. To hell with you. I'm out of here. Trade me to the Knicks. Literally could have happened. Oh, you know, in many other cases, it would have happened. He didn't, he stuck it out. The whole Monte Ellis thing. We could go through the whole thing. He stuck it out. He's been consistent. They've won with him. And now fans want him to act like a neurotic superstar and get himself out of here. It's not worth it. You know, Steph shouldn't want to be there. And I just think this is part of the package when you have someone like this. Tim Duncan is the one Kerr always, you know, refers to. There are other ones who just like, I want to be here. Dirk Nowitzki. I'm like, there was a time when the Warriors really wanted Dirk Nowitzki at the end of his, you know, run there in Dallas. It's like, come over here. We'll win a championship with you. And he did not want to do it. And I think Steph is in a similar place. Will he always be in that place? I don't know. But like, there's this understand, like this fans, like, please be neurotic like us. Mm. And Steph Curry, singular among many NBA players, superstars, certainly is not that guy. Ethan, you want to knock that down, or you want to back?
No, I think that's a great way to put it. And it's funny, this period of time is not fun as a Warriors fan, but if Curry just plays out the next couple seasons and retires with nothing much happening, I think there's almost going to be an appreciation for him hanging it up after completing his whole career in one uniform. That's very rare in the NBA nowadays and is an accomplishment unto itself. And so I think there would be an appreciation for it, but it also just feels as though we want to sim that. And we want to just catch up. We just want to fast forward to that point. That's the thing. There's a division, because a lot of fans feel the team should be maximizing what's left of him, because he's still, I don't know how we think about what he is. I think it was confounded by what he did in the Olympics and how he was so incredible, but he's not quite what he was. And you don't know what to expect of how much is left. You don't. So I just think a lot of the frustration is understandable, but I also just don't see it as so easy to get the requisite amount of talent around him to make this team competitive. When you see some of these teams loading up, the aforementioned Thunder and how great they are and how talented they are, I mean, what are you going to do to even get within striking distance of that? You maybe had a window. There were maybe moves you could have made. They probably should have traded Kuminga earlier. But you're here now. And you're here now, and I don't see much you can do to improve the situation other than having amazing late draft hits. Like, there's just not a lot you can do. I think it actually does get to some of the frustrations with the NBA overall, where oftentimes you're stuck. Oftentimes you're stuck for years, and then you're just sitting through 82 games of stuck. A 500 season in the NFL is exciting, topsy-turvy drama. A 500 season in the NBA is the most dreary slog you can have.
That's why, you know, there's ways to play it within that. You know, if you miss the playoffs this year, as I've written and fans got really mad at me, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. Get the play in, lose like they did last year. They would have had the 14th pick last year. It was already meant to go. But you get the 11th pick this year. It's a good draft. See what happens. Use it as a trade chip, whatever. And you get one more year out of this. You know, Warriors fans don't want to hear it. I understand. But you have to play with what you have. And you make a panic move now for what? You give up your first round pick for Nikola Vucevic. Are you going to beat, you know, even Denver in a potential first round match? Are you going to beat Memphis? Are you going to beat, forget about OKC? That's the part where the reality sets in. So I get the pressure of this. I get fans being very antsy. I get it, but I think it's bordering to the irrational on some of this that you have to work within the world. You can't work within a made up world. And if the dynasty is over, the dynasty is over. And then it becomes what Seth wants. And I don't know. Does he want to go to a team, you know, go run for, as you in the famous ring chase situation, and then not get it? And then what's he accomplished? Like, was he gonna go to the Boston Celtics? You can go to the Thunder? I don't know if that's kind of how he wants his career to end either.
Yeah, I don't know how interesting ring chasing is to a guy who's won the rings. Yep. I just don't know. I think he ideally would just want this team to be better, but then I don't know. Is he willing to play for the minimum? Is he willing to do something that would actually help facilitate that? I doubt it. I think it's an interesting question. And part of me, even if I miss aspects of my old job, part of me is happy to not be around some of the ugliness that happens in the aftermath. But
Myers got the hell out of there, you know?
Oh, the ugliness with Clay, how uncomfortable that was. And I still don't get why. I don't get why it curdled so much with Clay and the organization. Maybe they'll have bygones be bygones and they'll kiss and make up. But that was something.
When he lost his starting job, I think it's when he lost his starting job, and he kind of deserved to lose his starting job, but I get why he was so pissed off about it. Brandon Pajemski, it was like two games because then Pajemski got hurt, I think, or whatever it was, but he just didn't like that you're moving in these young people who I don't think are better than me. And he felt it a little bit from Jordan Poole, right? When Poole was still around, Poole was pushing him. I'll throw out one if they're going to get aggregated, whatever. I do think, I haven't written this, I've kind of touched on it. If the Warriors were really going to reset this, they would have traded Draymond when he punched Jordan Poole. Just trade him. Like, well, that moment, I don't know what you could have got. You could have got something and say, if we have to pick between these two, I would have picked Draymond. I would have picked Draymond. Still would have picked Draymond. But that's the moment we go, this is not workable. We've gone as far as we can with this guy. We saw what happened the next year. He got suspended for two other incidents. Just at that moment, say Draymond's not going to be on the team anymore. But I don't think Steph would have wanted that. And that's pretty important, too. I do think that was a dividing line moment for the Warriors.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And also, again, these are some of the issues when people have accomplished great things. The latitude and the purchase Steph has over what you're going to do is different than in a situation with a 500 team where nobody's done anything and you can just kind of make whatever moves and chart whatever course. But yeah, Steph wouldn't have wanted to do that. And I think in retrospect, maybe that would have been the way to go. And yeah, I think I mentioned the Kuminga thing. I think that was one again where Kuminga was not fitting what they are, but he was enticing from a talent perspective. and maybe the bloom is off that rose. You'd know better. You're covering the NBA.
I'm going back up the other way right now, I think.
Then sell high, perhaps. Well,
that's part of the Draymond discussion. If you trade Draymond, then Alston Kuminga is your starting power forward for the last 2+ years. And how different would the world look if that had happened?
I mean, people might disagree on Kuminga. I just look at Kuminga as somebody who is not fit what they do.
He doesn't.
And he's a better talent than he is a player at this point. And you got to make hard choices. You just do. I mean, you got to make hard choices that include some risk. That's one that I would have made in the past. And if it's possible to get a good return, it really all just depends. Similar to the 49ers trading down. What's the deal? What's the option? But that's certainly one that would be explored. Pajemski not making the leap, though, is also another disappointing setback. And I wonder what went into all of that. I wish that he was the Jalen Brunson guy he thought he was. That would be nice.
Yeah, he's not going to be that. He's played better since he came back from injury, but I do think it was almost a matter of too much expectation, too much talk about it. Joe Lacob talking about him being a future all-star. Pajemski really believing it, and that's fine. You want to have confidence, you know, but he talked a big game as a rookie, which is fine. He met it. But then when you have that sort of buzz around you, or, you know, accumulated buzz and leagues watching you, and then you do not play very well in your second season, I think there's just this kind of, a sag from everybody, including him, a loss of confidence. Maybe he's got it back because that guy's got confidence. But I think when you have super confidence and you get hit, then you need to see where you are after that. And I think the league is very, very curious about that. They need them. They really, really need them. And it'll be curious there. I want to get one other thing. You did your piece, very interesting piece about why you hating the Chiefs, but you still do. And it's this dynasty thing. I don't need to speak exactly to that. But I just was thinking Chiefs are basically a dynasty, chance to be the first ever three-peat Super Bowl. I think they're a favorite to do it. We'll see. Mahomes isn't even 30 yet. And you've got the Dodgers, the big discussion about, are they this dynasty? Is that bad for baseball? I think it's actually good, but, you know, we'll see how it can. They've only won one World Series in the last few years, but we'll see. Obviously, they are lining up for many more. You have this Thunder thing sitting there. You have Wembanyama sitting there. Are we looking at an era of dynasties? And is this a good thing or good specific to what sport? What are your idea on what a dynastic kind of era would be like?
Well, clearly it's better for baseball when the Diamondbacks are playing the Rangers in the World Series versus the Yankees against the Dodgers. Yeah. I mean, I think that's clear. Everybody knows that. Well, that is something that I had Freddie DeBoer on. He's a writer who mostly covers politics and culture, but he feels the dynasties are bad. I disagree. I hate them. I have that feeling of fatigue and somebody needs to beat them, but people show up for that. Floyd Mayweather made a career out of people tuning in, hoping that somebody would beat him. Yep. That's what he made a career off of. So I think dynasties are good for interest for the most part. And also, they lend a certain credibility to the sport. When football seems really random, then it's just hard to respect the outcomes. But when the Chiefs win, unless you're obsessed with the refs and those conspiracy theories, what are you to conclude but the team with the best quarterback, the best head coach, the best defensive coordinator, the best pass-catching tight end of all time, potentially, and maybe even the best special teams.
There you go.
That they won. The best defensive lineman of the era that this team won, and it makes complete sense because they're great and they do all the right things. They run their team in a way that I find to be so savvy, not overpaying for wide receivers, prioritizing a position like center that gets overlooked but matters. So I have that urge, that fanish urge, like so many people. I'm sick of them. Like so many people, I'm rooting for the underdog when I see them in a game. But when I look at it 30,000 foot view, I go, they deserve what they've earned. And I believe it's helped the league in many ways. And about 58 million people watched Patrick Mahomes go up against Josh Allen. If that's bad for interest, then what's good for interest? What alternative is better than that? So that's my take on it.
Yeah, as badly as the Warriors ruined the NBA, right? It was just awful when they were, racking up the ratings and playing those finals against LeBron. Now, you get to 5 in a row, 6 in a row, it might be a little different, but I completely agree. That's what I liked about the column specifically, was that you have to admire, respect, and at times pull for smart management, smart moves that lead to this.
You don't have to like it. I do think you have to respect it. I don't like when some of these people in sports media are lecturing the fans and saying, you need to appreciate this. Appreciate LeBron James. Appreciate the Chiefs. No, you don't have to appreciate anything that you don't want to appreciate. You can hate it. You can root against it. That's your right as a fan. But I think ultimately for the sport to matter and for the accomplishments in the sport to matter, gotta respect it. Gotta respect it. Otherwise, what's the point of winning if we're not going to respect the winner?
And what's history books about? You know, what are the way we our memories are about? They're not about, oh, remember that one time when the Detroit Pistons won? Whatever. I mean, some of those Pistons teams are great. I shouldn't say that, but I'm just trying to think of a, kind of a, championship. No, you think about
Nick Foles,
I guess, of beating the Patriots, though, which is it's interesting. That's more part of the Patriots history than it is about the Eagles at this point. Mm-hmm. They win another one and we start talking about some other things. But I like that. I like teams that you aim for. And I am particularly sensitive, I think, to the Dodgers one, because they've only won 2 in 5 years. They've lost division round playoffs. It's a short series. It could turn quickly on pitching. Guys get hurt. I think this is fun. You want a team that everybody's aiming after. You want that. I remember when the Texas Rangers, years back when they signed A-Rod, oh my God, they're just buying championships. They never came close. Let's see it play out. I'm cool with it. It's good when the Yankees are good. It's good when Notre Dame is good. It's good, it's good when the Lakers are good. This is something, a tent pole for us all to look at and measure other teams against. I'm good by this. All right, I've taken you way longer than I had asked you, but you've been kind enough to stay on. Ethan, I'll ask you a version of a question I've asked you before. I've been asked many other people on my show. What's your favorite movie right now?
You know, this is an answer that I wish I had a different answer. I wish I was a darker and more complicated person and I had some Kubrick movie or maybe even something else more obscure to show what a smart person I am, what a complicated guy I am. But the truth is, I just really love watching Midnight in Paris with Owen Wilson. That movie makes me feel good. It puts me in a good mood. I like this idea of going back to the salons and the saloons of Paris with these writers and these painters of the era. And I think it's a lot of fun to have an enthusiastic Owen Wilson be this guy. I'm like, wow. Oh my, I can't believe Ernest Hemingway. Wow. I just think it's so fun. I enjoy that movie. I sometimes will even play the soundtrack because it's just a good little music when my kid is around. It's not all music you want for a little kid. Sometimes the lyrics, you got to think about that stuff. And it's just a good vibe. Woody Allen's Midnight in Paris. That movie is highly rewatchable to me. It's funny. It's fun. I like movies that are actually in the city that they're depicting as opposed to soundstage situation. It's one I keep coming back to. So it's going to be that or a Linklater movie.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's the lightest Woody Allen movie, right? Of recent vintage. The one that he just gets out of the way of it. He's not involved in it. Not that I've watched many of them, but that one I've watched. And it's definitely my favorite Owen Wilson. Definitely my favorite Owen Wilson. Where he's not playing Owen Wilson. Sometimes I think he is. But excellent one, Ethan Strauss. With the Woody Allen rec, not a bad one at all. I'm trying to think Linklater. Which one would be the one you would recommend from him?
Well, the Before Sunrise series. Yeah, you're a rom-com person, and not everybody is. But what I love about Linklater is his obsession with time and how he'll play around with that. And how, for instance, he had a couple in a trilogy depicting the three seasons of their relationship. I think I like the first one best. Some people like the second one where they meet up 10 years later and some life choices have perhaps gone the wrong way. But I love how Linklater thinks about time. some of these movies are fun. Everybody wants some. That one where he's depicting a college baseball team in 1980, and he does it so studiously where everything is of the time, and he even recruits people to act in that movie who have baseball playing experience. And he had people send in their tape to show they could really play. So you don't have the typical actor throwing a ball and ruining suspension of disbelief. Linklater movies, they just tend to make me ruminate on those themes of time. And I tend to enjoy that. So anything by him, I'm usually going to like.
Talk about set in a real city, set in a place. That is Linklater. Yeah. He is in the place. All right, Ethan, thank you so much for your time, for the conversation. We'll see if we can't get aggregated there. Who knows?
We'll see.
It's you, so you'll get aggravated. You'll get aggravated and aggregated at the same time.
Clay's people were leaking a lot in his exit from the Warriors. I'll throw that one out there. No, there's a lot of his perspective getting leaked out there, so maybe that could get aggregated. I don't know.
Tag in Linklater plus Clay, get you aggregated. All right, everybody. Thank you so much, Ethan. Everybody, that's the show for today.